It's Karen Hartglass. We are back. It is March 19, 2000. Hey, it's Karen Hartglass. We are back. It is March 19, 2013. And we're talking about food, my favorite subject. It's all about food. And I am here in the studio with Karen Ranzi. I haven't seen Karen in a long time, but it's good to have her here in the studio. She is an author, lecturer, health coach, raw vegan chef, and speech pathologist. She has authored and published her book, Creating Healthy Children, in 2010. Her fresh plant-based recipe book and a book about healing acne naturally will be available in 2013. There's a whole lot more about Karen, and you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and read it. But right now, we're just going to get down to talking. Welcome to It's All About Food, Karen.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Yeah,
it's exciting to
be
here.
Now, I met you maybe 8 or 9 years ago when I was going through my raw food journey. I was all raw for about 2 years.
Right.
But I'm not anymore.
Mm-hmm. We met at a raw food, well, vegan cafe that had half the menu raw.
Which one was that?
Caravan of Dreams.
Oh, right. Yeah. Caravan of Dreams has a wonderful, wonderful menu of raw food and vegan food.
I think it's the best way to go about it because it really gives people a choice. Everything's vegan. And that way people who want to follow through with raw foods, there's plenty of raw vegan and there's
It's still
half
one of my
vegan.
favorite restaurants in Manhattan. And it's interesting because it's been around since the 90s, I think. And there have been so many other restaurants that have either come and gone or come and stayed that are vegan. And it still has, I think, my favorite menu.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a great menu there.
They have, I wasn't even thinking about talking about this, and now I'm really hungry. But they have wonderful salads on their menu.
They
wonderful.
Have so many choices. It's fantastic. It's really a vegan paradise.
Vegan paradise, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I used to go there a lot in my raw days.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you're on an all-raw diet?
I'm on an all-raw diet.
And how long have you been doing that?
19 years.
19 years? Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
But it started with my son. I made a lot of mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily
recommend. They're not mistakes, Karen. They're learning experiences.
They're learning experiences. Exactly. Yes. At the beginning, though, what really was a very powerful and meaningful experience was my son's healing from asthma, chronic ear infections, and multiple food allergies through, we were already vegan, but we were eating a lot of processed food. Pasta and bread was like our main staple. And I was sick a lot. And then when my son was an infant, really young, 5 weeks old, we were at the hospital. And he almost passed away there.
One of the worst places there. You want to be. It's so
exactly.
dangerous in the hospital. It's worse now than it was
He was only 5 weeks old.
Yeah.
And it was so scary. And for the next 3 years of his life, he had wheezing all day long. Mm. And it got much worse at night. I would sometimes sleep with him on top of me. I was so fearful. And we were running to doctors. He had chronic ear infections. He was in pain all the time. And he was allergic to almost everything.
Wow.
Pollens and foods and animal hair. And having this child out in the world was really difficult. And we tried everything. We tried allopathic medicine. We tried alternative kinds of therapies that had validity in and of themselves, but they weren't taking care of the cause of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started, after 3 years, I just hit rock bottom with going to practitioners, and I realized there had to be another way, and that's when I realized that what my own grandmother had done, right in my very own family, really was the spark for me to take off on doing raw foods, because as a young child, my grandmother had told me all about the benefits of eating very high in raw fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't say the word raw. She said natural. They didn't have that word raw back then. It was just natural, uncooked, getting all the nutrients. And I ignored her. I grew up in the 50s and the 60s. Mm-hmm. And they
better
were
living through chemistry.
Yeah. My father and my grandmother, they ate fruits and vegetables all day long and big salads and some steamed vegetables. And they didn't go to medical doctors and they were always healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And my, you know, my family, my other extended family ate differently. My friends ate differently. And I ignored that. But my grandmother had asthma and emphysema in the early 1920s.
Wow. Did she smoke?
She did not smoke.
Wow.
No. And they gave her some rounds of penicillin at the hospital, and that didn't do anything. Just made her much worse. And then they gave her only several months to live.
Mm-hmm.
And,
been there.
So you can relate to my story.
Right.
So my grandmother was a single mom. My father was only 4 years old. And, you know, for most people, like as Margaret Mead says, it's easier to change your religion than to change your diet. And that's why I also think it's hard. You know, a lot of people want to go vegan and then they try and they bounce back and forth. My grandmother was more determined because of her situation. And so she turned to a friend who had healed. And she got some information about a book that had just come out at that time by a German professor named Arnold Ehret, E-H-R-E-T. And the book is called The Mucusless Diet Healing System.
Yes, I have it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So she had somebody bring her that book when she was in the hospital.
Wow.
And she read it, and she said, I have nothing to lose. She became a vegetarian overnight. Then she moved to vegan. And then she moved to a diet that was very high in fresh plant foods. So she still had some steamed vegetables, maybe some vegetable soup or something like that. But she had most of her food was raw fruits and vegetables, some nuts and seeds. And she healed in under a year.
Wow.
So when my child was sick later on, after trying everything else I could, I eventually came back to that.
And it worked.
And it worked.
Wow.
So we did green juices and green smoothies and fruit and
vegetables.
You were
really ahead of your time. Now people are talking more about green juicing and green smoothies. It's becoming trendy.
Right. Yeah. We did it back then when nobody was, I mean, a few people, but not much out there. And there weren't really, you know, there certainly were not any support groups or festivals or expos for families. There was really no support group for my kids. And so I just learned from experience. There was a group in Manhattan that was run by a man named Matthew Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And that group brought me into Manhattan on Monday evenings to get together with other raw foodists and hear their success stories and to help to transition. And so I made a lot of mistakes along the way or had some life-changing experiences.
There you go. Uh-huh.
But, you know, eventually I think I found my way. When I work with people, though, I don't really ask them to go to 100% raw. I feel that just adding significant amounts of raw food is extremely beneficial and can certainly create a healthy lifestyle. Sometimes, especially for children, there can be social ramifications of going 100% raw. So I really tell the parents to leave that up to their kids.
I like to say, I said it earlier in the show, one thing is certain. That is nothing.
That's right.
We're learning a lot about nutrition, far more than we've ever known. And unfortunately, people get educated about nutrition by commercials more often than anything else. And most of our doctors don't know much. We hang on to one word here, or we listen to Dr. Oz or the doctor's shows. And that's not a place to learn about healthy food. Occasionally, they'll have a good program on, but they also bring on information about sensational things that are just nonsense. So it gets confusing.
That's right.
And there are magazines that have articles, and sometimes there's good information, but usually it's kind of mingled with some other stuff that's just nutty.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to say, one thing is for certain, and that is nothing really is certain, but there are a few things that we know now today, and we know that humans need to live on a primarily plant-based diet. We know this. Now, we don't know if a 100% vegan diet versus a primarily plant-based diet with a little bit of animal food in it is better. We don't have that information in terms of clinical tests. I personally think that eating all plant foods is superior, and it's superior not just for health, but also for other reasons, ethical and environmental.
Oh, right. And we've been, you know, we've seen this in the longest-lived cultures.
Right.
The Okinawans, they're known to have about 1%
Yeah, that's very small amount.
It's so small.
Underlined small. Okay.
And same as the other long-lived cultures,
right,
like the Costa Ricans who live on Nicoya Peninsula. They are also 1% to 2% animal products.
And then in the last 50 years or more now, we started to get in trouble because technology improved and things became more convenient and things started to get processed. And it's interesting because as we're learning more about diet and nutrition, more than we ever learned before, there's more bad things for us to eat at the same time.
Yes, definitely.
And it's confusing everything.
Yes. And in addition to that, the Meat and the Dairy Council have a monopoly over the school system.
Yeah.
So kids are learning in school that they definitely have to have meat and animal products to get enough protein.
Right. They get free material.
They're never taught about all the protein that you can get from eating plant foods.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of protein in the plant world.
And you say elephants and gorillas, and
that's
where do
right.
they get their protein from?
Exactly. And that was one of the things that I, you know, really direct people to do is look at the animals out there. The biggest animals, big, beautiful, muscular animals, are plant eaters. You know, the horse, the cow, the bison, the rhino, the elephant. They're all plant eaters.
Well, they should be plant eaters. I mean, unfortunately, the ones we raise for food, we feed them all kinds of things that they shouldn't be eating.
And the domestic animals get the same diseases as the humans get because of that. And,
excuse me. Okay. Now, I come from a scientific background, and when I read information, I like to see the science. It makes me feel better. I like to see clinical studies. I don't believe in all the clinical studies I see either, because very often when I get and I read the original report, I see flaws in the study, that they didn't compare the right things in order to come to the conclusions that they did. But I still like to see studies. But that being said, there's plenty that we don't know. So people that we both respect, like Dr. Furman, for example, he recommends that we eat at least 50% of our food should be, our calories from food should come from raw plant foods. We know that they're important. We don't know exactly why, and I think that's because the science just isn't there yet. People, and raw foodists get a bad rap a lot of times because they're using terms that are not based in science, and scientists might roll their eyes, you know, when people say this food is alive, or this food has an aura to it or something. That's because we don't have the science yet to measure what's in these foods that we know are so important.
Right. And I think also that some of the talk about enzymes, which I had believed for so many years, is not really accurate.
Right.
What I do know and what I truly do believe is that it makes a tremendous amount of sense that raw plant foods are more nutrient dense, or most of them are more nutrient dense, because when you put fire to something, it's got to take away some of the nutrients. And there have been studies that have shown that for many of the foods that are cooked, that somewhere around 70 to 85% of the nutrients can be void from those foods.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, is the thing that really drew me in to really believing that it was going to be better for me.
Well, I was drawn into the raw food concept, too, in around 2004, and I did it for about 2 years. And I fell out of it for a lot of different reasons, and one is because I got advanced ovarian cancer. My mm-hmm. belly started growing, and I was trying all different kinds of things with my diet because I thought I had uterine fibroids, and I didn't realize that it was this giant tumor that got out of control. Well, that's a long story. I've talked about it a bunch of times on this show. But what drew me to the raw food diet was originally I thought I want to do what I want to eat what humans are meant to eat, and I started thinking this is the most natural thing. I've changed my mind because I realize I was romanticizing a bit about, you know, the whole vision of Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden and all these lovely fruits, luscious fruits and things. And here it is 2013, then it was around 2006. I don't live in that world. This world is very different than the world of 1,000 years ago or whenever. When did fire, when was fire created? I don't know how many millions of years ago.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. yeah.
And so we live in a very different world today, and I just think we need to be open about all kinds of things. Our food is not as nutrient dense as it was originally because our soils are so poorly cared for, even if it's grown organically. There's a lot of things that are not natural anymore. And that led me to believe that maybe I don't need to be eating entirely raw. I realize that raw foods are really powerful. But sometimes when you cook food, you make other nutrients more absorbable. So there's this whole conversation of what really is best. And we don't really have the answer to that. So we all have to do what's comfortable
for us.
Right.
We have to do what feels best. For me, I've had just so many powerful examples and so many observations. I work with pregnant women, and I've observed women who have raw pregnancies. And I just interviewed a couple who had their second child. For their first child, she ate much differently. She had more of a conventional diet, and she started to become more, by the end of that pregnancy, she was vegan. Mm-hmm. She gradually went towards it. But she was, you know, eating, especially before that pregnancy, she was eating the standard American diet. And her first pregnancy was like a 4-day labor. And very difficult childbirth. And she had a totally raw pregnancy for her second child. And she gave birth. She had a very easy birth, and it was just wonderful. She had a home birth. And she's nursing. She's got this beautiful big baby. She's nursing him, and it's only from her milk. She's got a plentiful breast milk supply. Whereas with the first child, she had a hard time with breast milk supply, and she and her husband are just really quite sure it was from their total change in diet. They both, her husband lost about 100 pounds, and she also lost weight. They were both extremely overweight. So there's a lot of positive things that, you know, and they chose to go 100%. What I believe is that people can do really well just by increasing the raw plant foods in their diet from where they are. For me, it not only did it make a lot of sense because of the nutrient density, but also because of the water.
Mm-hmm.
When we cook our food, we are depleting the water. And so, you know, I don't need to really have studies for that kind of observation. I know that I need to drink a lot more water when I was eating cooked food. As when I went to raw foods, I'm getting really so much of my water from my green juices, my green smoothies, my big salads, my fruit. And I'm getting I feel that I'm getting the protein that I need. And so I think that with raw food, there are some things that we need to be careful of. First of all, there are many people who go totally gourmet.
I was going to bring this up next, some of your learning experiences. You know, there's
yes.
just like any diet, vegetarian, vegan, raw, there are so many different shades, the 50
yes.
shades of
yes.
vegan, the 50 shades of
and
raw.
And I have seen some very haphazard raw food diets,
mm-hmm.
and mine was that way for the first years.
Mm-hmm.
I did eat a lot of food, raw fruits and vegetables just the way they were, but I also ate a tremendous amount of nuts. loads of nuts. I could sit there with two cups of nuts a day, and it didn't do well by me.
I remember going to some of the gourmet raw restaurants and eating and just feeling really heavy afterwards from all the nuts, the oil, and the namashoyu.
Oh, definitely. And these are not health foods. Mm-hmm. We need a small amount of nuts and seeds.
Yeah,
but we don't need to have these huge amounts of nuts and seeds. Nuts are acid-forming. The only one that's alkaline-forming is almonds. And our blood is slightly alkaline. So we need to be eating the foods that are more alkaline-forming, and that's why I believe in a diet that's very high in green leafy vegetables. And I didn't do that at the beginning either.
Right.
I ate mostly fruit, and I still believe that we need to have fruit. I eat fruit,
you know,
but I upped my greens significantly
greens,
over the years.
Greens. You know how much I talk about greens on this show.
I'm sure you do.
I have
I'm
a food sure show called It's All About Greens. It's All About Greens.
Yes.
On my website. The thing about fruit. Now, when I started on an all-raw diet a long time ago, I was eating a lot of fruit, and I think that was part of my problem. Eating a lot of fruit, you can get a lot of sugar. And sugar, if you're not entirely healthy, can aggravate some problems that you already have. But some of the other scary things about fruit these days, I was talking to Adam Gollner, who wrote a book called The Fruit Hunters, and he was talking about what we do to tropical fruit to bring it to the United States, or fruit in general. And there are so many things. A lot of the tropical fruits actually get a little cooked before they bring them in.
Oh, yes. I know that with the mangoes.
Yeah.
They eat the mangoes.
And when I think about all those things, I think, well, maybe I should just wait until I get to Costa Rica and eat the foods that are there.
Right. When I was in Costa Rica, the bananas, you know, bananas ripened. We would take off a whole bunch, but they ripened on the plant. And it was just a whole different experience than the bananas that we eat here. But I still feel that we need not only the vitamins, but we also need the calories, the glucose from the fruit. So I certainly don't believe in giving up fruit. And, you know, some people say that, you know, if they have cancer, that they should give up fruit. I have also observed people heal cancer with fruit. So
I was eating only berries during my treatment period, the not so sweet, high answer cancer fighting property kind of fruits,
lower
berries.
Glycemic. Right.
Now, in your book, Creating Healthy Children, which came out 2 or 3 years ago, you reference a lot of different people who have a lot of different things to say about a lot of different things.
That's right, and some of them differ greatly.
And a lot of them differ greatly. I wanted to bring up a few of them, and maybe some of the things that I didn't agree with. Okay, so clearly we agree on the power of raw fruits and vegetables. Everybody's got to be eating them, and greens, kale is king. There's nothing that kale can't do. I can't say that enough.
Right.
But I eat soy foods, and I think that organic, minimally processed tofu, tempeh, edamame, I think they're good, and they actually have some preventative, protective qualities when it comes to cancer. You mentioned Sally Fallon and the Weston Price people. They do not promote a vegetarian diet.
They don't.
They don't.
The only thing that I agree that they do talk about is the problems with soy.
So my question to you is, when they're so anti-vegetarian diet, how do you find their information on soy credible? Because I don't, but I just wondered.
Right. Well, I do believe because it's not only their information. I also quoted Dr. Gabriel Cousins, who has done quite a lot of research on soy, and he is vegan.
And raw.
He's raw and vegan. And I put their information in there because I felt that it was, I felt that from all of the different observations that I've made and people who I've spoken with, that their information on soy was accurate. And I do feel that tofu and soy milk, that those products are highly processed. I feel that tofu is no better than eating white bread.
Well, it depends on where you get it from. There are some that are better than others.
Maybe if somebody's making it locally and you know exactly how they're making it and it's not so processed. But I I think that the majority of the tofu out there and the, you know, highly processed soy products.
I tell people there's plenty of plant foods out there. If you don't want to eat soy foods, that's fine. But I'm very comfortable eating the minimally processed tofu, tempeh, and edamame, miso.
Tempeh is better.
Because it's fermented.
Because it's fermented. But I never recommend the tofu and the other more processed foods. They're also highly allergenic. I know a lot of children who have been given soy early on and they become allergic.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very hormonally unbalancing. It's very high in estrogen.
That's a difference of different opinions. I mean, some people believe, some medical and nutritional professionals think that it helps to balance the hormones. It depends. So, I mean, there's a lot of interesting information about that. So we just have about another minute or two left, and you don't just talk about food in here, but you also talk about attachment parenting.
Yes.
We just have like a minute where you might talk about it, but I think it's important.
Oh, it's so important. A lot of people ask me, because half of my book is about getting those raw living plant foods into your family lifestyle, and the other half of the book is about following the needs of the child, the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual needs of the child through attachment parenting. And what that is after the child is born, the child doesn't know where he or she is in the world. The child needs to be connected to the most important person in that child's world, and that is the mother. And being held against the mother's skin, and certainly not to be put in a crib at the end of the hall to scream it out, but to be connected, to staying with the mother, to be held against the skin as much as possible in those first hours, days, and even weeks after birth, and following that child as the child grows and develops. And at each level, there's a different aspect of attachment parenting that caters to the child's needs.
Karen, we could talk about this all day, and unfortunately, we're out of time. I can't believe how quickly the half hour went.
Definitely.
But thanks for joining me. And where can people find out more about you? You have a website.
My website is superhealthychildren.com.
Superhealthychildren.com.
And I also have a YouTube channel, Super Healthy Children.
And may all children be super healthy. Thanks for joining me. And it's all about food. And I'm Karen Hartglass. And visit my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com and swingingourmets.com. And have a delicious week.
Hi, this is Tony Hendra
and Jeff Chrysler
of the Final Edition Radio Hour
on PRN,
your source for organic,
gluten-free,
sustainable
satire.